the media and communication space, and the noise and the hysteria has been so damaging.
If you are sitting in East London and you are running a business, 30 and 33% tariffs do not make that much difference on in your world. So one way or another, it doesn't really change the reality that much, which is why I guess then really you were impatient with some people who were saying the sky is falling, AGOA is going, because you were saying, making a point that, guys, we already have a problem here.
Hello, everyone. Hello. Welcome to the Readiness Report with me, Ridi Tlhabi, and the Daily Maverick. This episode is brought to you by the Friedrich Naumann Foundation. We talk about the world. We talk about South Africa's place in the world. And one of the key themes are around our economy, how we're doing on the trade front, facts versus fiction. So our topic today is AGOA reprieve, the tariff turbulence, what it means for South Africa's exports and farmers. And we also want to find out where South Africa is situated on the agriculture and economy front. And there's nobody else to go to in South Africa except Wandile Sehlobo, who is an agricultural economist, and he has his own podcast where he generously spends time explaining these complex trends and just making sense of them. Wandile, it's lovely to have you on the Readiness Report. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, Ridi.
Thank you. So, you know, South Africans amuse me, né? Because we've spent the better part of 2024, 2025 talking about how we are going to be punished by Donald Trump. AGOA is going because of our foreign policy position. South Africa is going to be punished. Fast forward, things happened at Congress, at the Senate. And then last week, Washington made a decision, and President Donald Trump, instead of what was predicted by so many doomsayers, he signed a short extension of AGOA through December 31st, 2026. Of course, retrospectively since September 30th, 2025. I just thought, Wandile, that for the amount of noise that kind of just permeated the space, you would think that the signing extension of AGOA would also make the same amount of noise. This extension is not ideal, I think, because institutionally, it's much better to extend these kind of things for a period of 3 years, 4 years to create institutional stability. But Mr. Trump just does these little bits and little bits. But that's not the point. As far as South Africa was concerned, or South Africans and critics were concerned, we were going to get kicked out of AGOA. And it's not going to work. It's our foreign policy positions. It's not about reciprocal tariffs and so on. I just want to get your reaction to the fact that South Africa is still in AGOA, and what is the significance of that?
I think, Ridi, I'll take you back for a moment to 2014. At the time, you were at Radio 702. And one of the conversations that was taking place, you would have at times folks from the chicken industry in South Africa that were complaining about the imports of the US to South Africa. But also the core point of that time was South Africa at the edge of being graduated out of AGOA. And the point that the US was raising at the time was that they had come up with this program to help the countries that were very at the lower end. And they felt that South Africa was now an upper middle income country, and it needed to graduate out of this unilateral agreement so that we can find a way to be on a bilateral trade agreement. Yes. But of course, subsequent to that, we remained part and parcel of the agreement. And one of the complications was that we do trade matters as a bloc with the Lesothos, Botswana, whose economic development is not in the same standard as or status as South Africa. And I think then that is an important context, because when people are saying South Africa will be kicked out of AGOA, they pretend as if suddenly this is something of now, and it has a lot to do with however certain individuals perceive South Africa. But I think overall, the fact that it was extended, sentiment-wise, it plays positively for us, given that there was a lot of negativity in around the country about this aspect. But I would, again, side more strongly with your point of saying this is not really an ideal thing. What we want is to find some bilateral trade agreement. So I hope that we can use this period towards the end of the year to to find something that can help us to graduate out of that and look like Morocco and many others that have taken that path.
And it's so important that you give us that historical context. I remember how heated it was at that time. And there's still people who responded now and saying, in any case, given the size of our economy, the dynamics, we don't really need to be in AGOA. But here we are, and you're saying it signals positive sentiments. Perhaps let's just deep dive into what this extension actually means and why it matters. I'm trying to understand what it is that South Africa actually sells or bring into the US. What would be the benefits?
You know, since the Liberation Day tariffs that introduced the 30% tariff in here, the benefits of AGOA were quite frankly eroded because the United States before this administration was having a general tariffs on what we call the most favored nation tariff, which will be the tariffs they apply on average on any goods entering their market at around 3.4%. So if you were part of AGOA, for those products that benefit, they will be exempted and go straight to zero instead of facing those particular tariffs. So we would find ourselves being at a much more competitive level than other countries that don't have a bilateral agreement with the US, or benefiting in a form of a similar approach as AGOA at the time. That 3% tariff did make a difference. But now that we are in this space where we're still facing these higher Liberation Day tariffs, what this was going to mean was that South Africa, the tariffs we face in the US, instead of just being 30%, they would increase to be 33%, and in some product, 33.4, 33.8. But I think on balance of things, if you are sitting in East London and you are running a business, 30 and 33% tariffs do not make that much difference on your in your world. So one way or another, it doesn't really change the reality that much, which is why I guess then really you were impatient with some people who were saying the sky is falling, AGOA is going, because you were saying, making a point that, guys, we already have a problem here. What we need is a long-term solution rather than these piecemeal approaches that we're getting into. But again, if we were not included in AGOA, I think that the people who are saying negative things about the country were going to take it to the extremes and say, look, this is what we told you. Things are so horrible. So the fact that then we were included, I think that sentiment-wise, although they should be coming up and acknowledging this, they are not.
Yes.
But I think it does then board at least a little bit positive on that.
And I mean, Wandile, you're absolutely correct. And this is my space, right? The media and communication space. And the noise and the hysteria has been so damaging. And I am also glad that South Africa, that it was extended for those reasons, for the optics. I just think there's been so much tension in this relationship that it can't afford another thing. Even if South Africa had not been covered in this new or extended dispensation, the sky wouldn't be falling down for the reasons that you've so articulated. But I do think from an optics point of view, and maybe to just aid what is really, really a tense relationship. And it just a thought, it just really shows that Trump is a performer. A lot of what you see in the foreign policy space, not just directed at South Africa, directed at the United States' traditional allies as well. There's a lot of heat, a lot of noise, a lot of optics. And then behind the scenes, things do tend to happen differently. But can you just talk to us about where South Africa is right now, about its on its competitive strengths? I see you and some government ministers, some captains of industry crisscrossing the globe, whether it is in the UAE, at Davos, India, you name it. There is South Africa out there in the world. What's your sense of South Africa's competitive strengths in this fragmented time?
Yes, Reddy. And if you may permit me, Reddy, just a quick point in here, because I don't want us to be viewed as if we were beating one side of the of fellow South Africans, because I think we are facing people that are viewing the relationship of the US both in the extremes. And I saw this on the 8th of February, putting out a post on X where I was saying, look, for the whole year of 2025, the South African farming sector, which many people were using it as a proxy of how things can be bad if there's no AGOA, its agriculture, it exports to the US, the South African agriculture exports to the US, they were around $500 million. They are down only by 3% from 2024. Now people were saying, look, with all of these tariffs, then nothing is happening. We should just not pay any attention, which I think both those that are saying things are sky is falling and these ones are both not necessarily really helping in that constructive middle road, which we need to be thinking about. Because the reason their exports were stable is because certain businesses took advantage of that 90-day tariff pause, as well as the first quarter of the year when there were no tariffs. But if you look at our exports then in this third quarter and the fourth quarter, they were down quite significantly. In fact, the fourth quarter isolating it, they were down 39%. So that just tells you then that at the time, AGOA was active, but these Liberation Day tariffs, the impact of them, again, to underscore your point that AGOA optics is good, but economics, there's a whole different aspects. But broadly now, Rudy, as to how South Africa is viewed in the world, at least drawing in my own observation on a number of aspects, I would say there's a lot of optimism that is there. And many people do want to engage with South Africa. You either go to the World Economic Forum and you're visiting many other countries, there's always an ask for a bilateral engagement about South Africa. And there's a number of things that people look to when they're looking at our country. There's a sector that I work in of agriculture, food, fiber, and beverages. But also there's an aspect around the auto industry, as an aspect around the mining, but also thinking about the manufacturing aspect and the whole range on the services and the financing. So South Africa has a lot of aspects at which we can partner, we can export, we can expand with a number of countries, which we always get interaction about, even on a retailing aspect.
So if you are an exporter listening to this, I mean, I just want to go back to AGOA, just to get a sense of where it is most valuable. Where does a tariff preference genuinely change competitiveness?
If you are an exporter, really, and you are looking at this, I think that where it will be, it was generally most valuable on, was agriculture and the auto industry were amongst those. Now, of course, the folks in East London, in the Eastern Cape, they are in a difficult space. And I think for them, perhaps maybe more so than the farming sector, even the 3% does make a difference for them between 30 and 33% rather than what you see in the farming sector. And in the farming sector, it's not everything that we send to the US, because the US generally accounts for about 4% of the South African of farming products. I mean, this is a country that in 2025 exported $15.1 billion, up 10% from the previous year. So in this environment, that is a turbulent environment, we actually saw farm exports in South Africa increasing by 10%. That just tells you exactly that competitiveness of the South African farm product. But the key thing is, of course, the fact that the Western Cape was the most exposed on AGOA, alongside certain parts of Mpumalanga, because we're exporting wine, table grapes, citrus, and the nuts. And of course, then the auto industry to pair it with that. I would say those are some of the primary industries that are most exposed to this environment that we are in.
My Africa protects my democratic rights.
My Africa gives equality for all.
My Africa gives me the right to play.
The right not to be tortured.
The right to be born equal and free.
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 Let's talk human rights.
I was really fascinated, of course, what happens in the US tends to dominate most of our foreign policy preoccupations. But there's a whole world out there. I mean, when you look at the regional shares of our agricultural exports, Africa, I think 44%, Wandile, Asia and the Middle East, 21%, the EU, 19%. So those are crucial markets that we ought not to ignore. You mentioned table grapes, and I've just remembered that I woke up to a post by the agriculture minister, and the presidency, I see, has also posted that South Africa has gained market access for the export of fresh table grapes to the Republic of Korea. I just remembered that when you were talking about where else we export and some of those markets that we are trying to penetrate. So that's a bit of good news, right?
That's a bit of good news, really. And I think the most important thing is that those are countries also that carry a lot of capacity to expand. Because right now in South Africa, when we look at our food and agriculture industry, we can still see this sector expanding by plus 30% over the next 5 years. The key question then is, where is all this going to go? Because about half of what we produce goes already to export markets. And the Middle East and Asia are those promising countries. To add to those good news you're outlining, I mean, the very same fact that we signed last week in South Africa, the Africa-China Framework Agreement, which allows then for tariffs to decline, not only for agriculture, but a whole range of other industries. But of course, it's a balancing act on that, because China sends a lot of auto products into South Africa. And now we have to be thinking about to say, okay, if down the line they want reciprocity, what does that imply for our auto industry, for our steel industry and many others? But I think, at least from my observation of the negotiations, they are flexible to South Africa outlining some of those sensitive industries that we can put necessary protective measures. But the point is, again, to what you have alluded, there's a whole world that is out there which is open to engaging with South Africa and absorbing South African product and with the buying power to purchase some of the things that we are able to offer to the global market.
One of the things that I'm always cautious about, based on observation and sometimes how our government communicates, you know, sometimes we drink our own Kool-Aid and don't confront realistically and objectively the things that constitute constraints or risks. I'm thinking, even as we speak about this, pivoting a little bit from AGOA, there is a risk here, supply side constraints. Even when the markets are open, exporters need ports, they need rail, they need cold chains. I mean, how big is the logistics bottleneck right now, not just for agriculture, but everything else? This is urgent for South Africa, isn't it, in order to boost competitiveness?
Yeah, I mean, it's everything, really, both just getting our product there, but also making sure that we are able to move them at an affordable price. And I would say, really, right now, we are at a far better position than, say, 2023, 2024, which were some of the most difficult times. But you're right, that's a part that we need to be applying a lot of attention to, the rail as well as the ports. But there's another aspect, really, that we don't talk a lot about, the municipalities. Because at the end of the day, we have SANRAL maintaining the major roads in South Africa. But there's these municipality roads where many people that are manufacturing stuff, they have factories that they have to go through these municipalities. And those roads and the costs of actually moving on bad roads that they add, I mean, it's just a lot. I know agribusinesses that are just in the farming space, but they will tell you that they are spending an extra 30 million rand because of municipality that is not building the road to ensure that they fix the cars. Now imagine in a rural Limpopo or rural Eastern Cape, a 30 million rand invested in something else would make a lot of difference in those areas. It may not be paid for someone who's sitting in urban areas, but if it's injected in a rural economy to do something, it changes the fundamentals. So there's a number of those things that I think, beyond just what then the foreign affairs aspect, there's a lot of things that the South African government really needs to do to ensure that we remain competitive and businesses are able to do that. And the major thing here really is also the fact that bigger businesses can stomach that cost and do this. But if you're now thinking about the small businesses, medium scale ones, they are actually unable to function without these supportive infrastructure aspects.
I don't have the statistics in front of me, but when you mention the municipalities, what is often so exasperating is that some of them, those where this investment is needed the most, actually return their budgets to Treasury because they failed to spend. So you think South Africa doesn't seem to have a problem with the availability of resources and the financial muscle to make these investments. There is a structural problem, but there's also a psychological one as well, where we have normalized not spending the budget or rushing to spend it quickly on the things that are not going to to help us in the long term. From your sense, is this something that the government is taking seriously? I mean, is there are there plans to intervene in this? Because I've been in the media for over 20 years, and there are always topics that I return to. And the poor performance of municipalities is one of them. The importance of being able to identify these bankable projects, identify these urgent projects that are going to have a more macro impact on our economy and actually get them done. What do we need to get to that point?
You will remember, Reedy, in 2019, God bless his soul, the late Governor Mboweni, he came up with this paper, which was called the Dido paper. At the time, what was really in that paper was about what we need to do to improve the network industries. Issues of water, issues of roads, the electricity supply, and all of these things. And they were really channeling to this municipality aspect, because really some of these municipalities have to ensure that there's safety, there's water, there's towns are clean, and roads are maintained, the basics. And once those are in, then the whole range of investments and the other things can begin to flow in on that. But I think what is encouraging for now, but it really has to see a follow-through work into this, is the fact that the current administration has the issue of local government as its primary focus. And then now that is receiving some attention. And then a political level, and I'm going to use the ANC because it is the biggest political party. If you read President Ramaphosa's January 8th statement, it was really central on this issue of the local governance, which he declared it in that way. But then the key thing is one thing for the leadership of the Union Building to say that, and the GNU government to say local government is its priority. And this message translating to those people that are in the small municipality in Modimodi in Limpopo, in Bizana in the Eastern Cape, and Carnarvon in the Northern Cape, really getting to do some of these things. And I think that that message needs to filter through them. And we have to ensure then that we see the deliverables going in. Because if we don't do that, by the way, much of the big things that we talk about at a national level, it would be very difficult to actually resolve, because people forget this, because, I mean, the economy is not something that is up there at the top level.
Yeah.
It's really the micro things and the small things that are done by the businesses are calculative, all of that, and bring it together. And then this gives you then this value of production of things that are coming out of South Africa. But we have to enable those people to be able to do these things in their own environment.
I can't let you go before we speak about something that is topical. We are about to conclude the foot and mouth situation. Causing some panic? Are we handling it well? What's happening on that front?
I think really the one point I would start off with here is literally assure South Africans that dairy and red meat products in South Africa are safe for consumption. So the first thing we have to do is to continue with our normal lives. If you are sitting on a consumption side, don't worry about it. Foot and mouth disease is not posing any risk to you. Not that farmers are culling animals that we have foot and mouth disease, they don't, but it's important that we know that. The second aspect is that we are not having a country that is out of control and having foot and mouth disease in every area. But it is true that 8 of our 9 provinces do have the outbreaks that are there. KZN, Northwest, Gauteng, and Free State are the hardest hit provinces on this. There are major losses that the farmers are experiencing, because now there's a reduced auctions, the milk production has declined significantly, and of course there are a few deaths that some may experience here and there in the process. So all of that is posing a lot of risk for farmers. But there is a plan on the vaccination approach. My sense, listening to the minister and engaging with the leadership in the country, is that over the next 3 months or so, we will actually be having a well different conversation than what we are having this time around. And I think that people will hear from the leadership of the country their direction going forward. But I'm quite encouraged about where we are at the moment. But the risk and the pain economically is there on the farm.
Well, Wendile, it's always such a joy to speak to you. I learned so much, and who would have thought that the field of foot and mouth and vegetables and maize and all of that would be so exciting. But I really enjoy talking to you, and thank you so much for the patience with which you explained these matters. This is something very important for business, policy, farming, and for our sense of nationhood to understand where South Africa stands in the world. Thank you so much for joining the Readiness Report.